Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'll just ask the court if I speak too slowly, be sure and tell me to speed up. Okay. This case involves our client's, the appellant's, conviction for attempted capital murder. And the issue, I think, is pretty clear, arises from the state's amended indictment. The indictment that was returned by the grand jury alleged the appellant employed someone else for remuneration, and that this other person then directly shot the appellant's wife. And that's the way the indictment originally read from the grand jury. Some 3 weeks to a month before trial, however, the state filed and entered an amended indictment where, for reasons I just don't understand, they reversed it, where they changed the allegation to be that our client received remuneration, was employed by someone else and received remuneration, and that he himself personally shot his wife. The case proceeded to trial, and at the inception of the case, it became progressively more clear from the state's opening argument forward that the state really had no intention to prove the allegations in the amended indictment. That is, that our client received remuneration from someone else, and that he personally shot his wife. It's undisputed that the appellant was actually in California, in Lake Tahoe, I believe, at the time of the shooting. And the state, at the close of the state's case in chief, my defense counsel, my colleagues here, not only asked for an acquittal, but actually expressly cited to a case called Planner versus State. And they gave volume and page number and provided a copy to Judge McFarland to read. Judge McFarland overruled that motion for an acquittal or directed verdict and allowed the case to proceed. At the close of all the evidence, the state then raised a legal theory that the defendant could be found guilty as a party to receiving money and a party to the shooting of his wife. The problem with that is that although generally the rule is that the law of the parties is a theory that does not need to be alleged in an indictment, the problem the state has in this case, and the error committed by the trial court, arises from the fact that the Planner decision says you cannot use a law of the parties theory to convict someone when there's two alternative theories or elements in the statutory definition, and you've chosen as the state to plead one of the alternative elements, but not the other. And that the way this definition of the statute of attempted capital murder in these circumstances is set out is there's an alternative. Either someone received remuneration or they paid remuneration to another. And in the Planner case, it's really all fours in this case. A party therefore cannot be made a party. If they're the ones alleged to have paid the money, they cannot be convicted of being a party to receiving the money. The state cites a number of cases that are kind of inapposite and different circumstantially from the facts in our case. I know that most, if not all, of those decisions that say that a law of the parties theory can be the basis of a conviction, all of those cases do not deal specifically with our situation. They do not address Planner. And as a matter of fact, they almost all precede the Court of Criminal Appeals decision in Planner. Planner remains good law. And as recently as barely a year ago, in June of 2014, the Court of Criminal Appeals in Rabb versus State, 434 Southwest 3rd, 613, that's a case that's not cited in the briefs, said this, quote, "When the state pleads a specific element of a penal offense that has statutory alternatives for that element, the sufficiency of the evidence will be measured by the element that was actually pled and not any alternative statutory means," and it cites Planter for that proposition. as well as several other cases. So what we're looking at on this issue that we have about the insufficiency of the evidence is, what should the hypothetical correct jury charge be? And in this case, because of the Planner decision and as applied in Planner, it's going to have to be confined to whether the state proved that our client, the appellant, received remuneration and shot for remuneration his wife. The state does not dispute, there is no evidence to support those allegations. So for those reasons, the court's required to enter an acquittal on this appeal. The subsequent issues we've raised in our brief deal with what is the remedy. Our position is that the court has two alternatives. It can acquit, or maybe even three. It can enter an acquittal for all charges, including any lesser included offense. It can consider whether to reform the judgment of conviction for the lesser included offense of just attempted murder. And in that context, we're conceding that the law of the parties would apply, because you're not dealing with the same situation where you've got alternative means as you would in the capital offense, as alleged. Or the court can remand for a new trial. That's another possibility. We submit to the court that, number one, on the reformation of the judgment, Thornton versus State, Court of Criminal Appeals decision, sets out two criteria, both of which needs to be met by the state. Number one, that the jury necessarily found the elements of the lesser included offense. And number two, even if that is shown by the state, there has to be a sufficiency review done with regard to an assumption, assuming that the defendant had been convicted of the lesser included. Is there sufficient evidence upon which a reasonable jury, could have found beyond a reasonable doubt he, the defendant, was guilty of the lesser included? We submit to you that as far as the reformation goes, apart from that, it may be that the jury necessarily found the elements of attempted murder. The problem in this case is that there is insufficient evidence to show that our client was a party to the attempted murder by a gentleman named Lawrence. We don't deny that there is evidence that our client was a party, at least as alleged, and the evidence would support an allegation that he was a party to some negotiations and dealings with a guy named Billy Johnson. But there is no connection between what our client did as a party with Billy Johnson, and no connection between Johnson and this person named Lawrence, who neither Johnson had any dealings with, and our client didn't have any dealings with. Johnson at the time was confined in the Denton County Jail, long prior to this attempted murder. And so we just submit that the state cannot meet that second prong of the Thornton test to show that there is sufficient evidence to establish our client, beyond reasonable doubt, was a party to the actual shooting done by a person named Lawrence. We also argue that it's a pretty clear inference from Thornton that the question of whether a case could be remanded for a new trial on the lesser included would be confined to the same considerations that would apply to the second prong of the Thornton test, that is, whether there is sufficient evidence upon which the jury in the trial court at the time of the request for the acquittal could have found the appellant guilty of attempted murder. And we submit that because, again, there is insufficient evidence, double jeopardy would prohibit the court from remanding for a new trial on guilt as well as punishment for the attempted murder. I don't believe I have anything additional. I reserve the rest of my time unless there's some questions for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wedden. Ms. Simmons?
May it please the court, counsel. First off, I would like to thank y'all for coming to Denton County. Pleasure to have y'all here, and as you can see, everybody's always interested when you do come to town, so we do appreciate that. I would first like to address the case and agree with opposing counsel, Mr. Gladden, that the case does come down to how the state pled the offense in this case in the amended indictment. Indeed, the state drafted the amended indictment and listed Mr. Howard as the principal actor in the language. However, the state's theory from the very beginning was that Mr. Howard was a party to the offense and the state was relying on party liability to prove up the facts of the offense. Normally when we do use party liability theory in a case, it's usually alleged as the principal and then we utilize the party liability later. There is no violation of due process for not giving a notice of the use of the state's party liability theory in the indictment. It's well established law that the defendant or appellant is on notice of that regard in any case, and that what most likely, what the best possible means is of handling that is in the application paragraph of the jury charge. And under Malik, there are several cases even where the party liability theory has not been properly applied to the facts of the case, but the cases have still been affirmed on a finding of the applicability of the state's theory of party liability to the facts of the case.
Okay, in the first indictment, y'all alleged that the appellant was the hitman, hired the hitman, right?
I believe so, yes, correct.
And then y'all changed it to plead that he was the hitman, intending to prove that he was not the hitman, that he hired the hitman, just like y'all had pled originally?
Well, I think what you have to look at in that aspect of what happened from the original indictment to an amended indictment is trial strategy, which happens in many cases where...
So y'all were just trying to confuse him?
No, Your Honor. There was no gamesmanship whatsoever in amending the trial or the indictment. In fact, I think that the original indictment pretty much told you what we were doing. The amended indictment merely allowed us to change the facts for trial strategy purposes, but the theory the state relied on never changed. No one ever thought that Howard, in this case, personally shot Nancy Howard. States conceded that in his brief. In our brief, and will continue to admit that he was not in the state of Texas when this occurred. He was with his mistress out of state, as a matter of fact, I believe gambling at a casino. We never thought that he shot his wife. What the evidence will show is that the state's theory has always been party liability. Mr. Howard, in this case, has paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to have his wife killed. He's paid those to numerous...
And that's what y'all played the first time.
It comes down to a statutory interpretation, the application of case law, and the definition of words utilized in the indictment on determining what specifically the state has to prove or not prove at trial, and trying to have a trial strategy as to what system or theory we proceed on is best supported by the evidence and is clearer, the most clearest avenue for the jury to understand.
I don't understand a word you just said.
I could slow down for you.
Well,
what I'm trying to say.
He started out pleading he was a hitman. I mean, he hired a hitman. And then out of trial strategy, y'all decided, even though you were going to prove he was a hitman, prove that he hired a hitman, you were going to pretend you were going to prove that he was the hitman?
I don't believe the state ever pretended anything. It's a well-established law that party liability.
I'm trying to figure out what y'all were doing.
We were amending the indictment in order to present our case in a clearer manner before the jury, rather than adding too many additional factors that would complicate the case before the jury when we had so many various players in this. And we were trying to limit the amount of proving Howard had a connection with A, who had a connection with B, who resulted in a connection with C, which resulted in his wife being murdered.
Which is what y'all ended up proving, trying to prove, right?
But we ended up proving that was the evidence, that it was simplified by party liability of saying, not that we had to prove that he employed or had a contract or an agreement per se with Lawrence, but rather that he was a party by aiding, assisting, and there were multiple means which would have allowed us to prove that he did those factors when in fact he hired Lawrence or another person to shoot his wife and then return for remuneration on the promise thereof.
So is it your position that as you amended the indictment and as you allege that Mr. Howard shot his wife for remuneration, that as that's pled, that includes both paying remuneration and receiving?
In receiving, in Howard receiving remuneration?
I mean, it's not your position he received any remuneration, correct?
No, our theory is that Lawrence or another person, in exchange for remuneration or the promise thereof, shot Nancy Howard.
I understand that. So how do you get around Mr. Gladden's argument that as it was pled and as the Planter case holds, you had to have pled that he paid remuneration versus received remuneration? Because that's what I understand Mr. Gladden's argument to be.
Well, I think party liability theory does that. It inserts for the word, in the indictment, it inserts the word Lawrence or another person for Mr. Howard's name by applying party liability theory. And so
I believe Mr. Gladden stated that the indictment alleges that he received remuneration.
Lawrence received remuneration.
Howard with a firearm for remuneration. So I believe Mr. Gladden's position is that if the indictment alleges that he received remuneration, that Mr. Howard, the defendant, received remuneration, then under Planter, he cannot be a party when you prove that he paid remuneration.
Well, the distinction that Mr. Gladden was relying on for Planter is that when you allege one offense and you plead another offense, which is outlined within the statute as an alternative means of committing the offense, which in this case would have been employed another person for remuneration. That was my understanding of Planter. In the amended indictment, the language that the state used was they shoot Nancy Howard with a firearm for remuneration or the promise of remuneration. So by applying party liability, we're arguing that Lawrence shot Nancy Howard with a firearm for remuneration or the promise of remuneration, that he was being paid and receiving money. Howard did not receive the money. Howard is the man who paid anyone he could come in contact with to shoot his wife. The person, Lawrence, is the person that we're alleging committed the offense by shooting Nancy.
No, you didn't allege that. You didn't allege that. You tried to prove that. That's not what you alleged. You alleged Howard did the shooting. Right?
We alleged that he shot Nancy Howard with a firearm for remuneration or the promise of remuneration. And in applying party liability theory, basically party liability is saying that you're a party to that case by assisting, promoting, directing, aiding.
That's your proof, but that's not your plea.
I guess I'm a little confused. I mean, if we're saying that Howard shot Nancy, but under party liability, we're saying he actually aided a party who shot, and then Howard received remuneration, but based on party liability, he didn't actually receive it. Lawrence or the other person received remuneration. And that by applying that party liability, it has taken Howard, it has made him a party to the offense, not the principal actor in the indictment. That Lawrence is who we proved up was Lawrence or another person. I'm not understanding the questions correctly.
Well, I think the crux of the argument is that under party liability, as you've just laid it out, you alleged that Howard was a firearm for remuneration or promise of remuneration, committed the act, right? So you're saying that under party liability. He assisted Lawrence in doing that, but you also allege that then he assisted in for remuneration, which is the receipt of monies. And according to Mr. Gladden, under the Planter case, you can't be a party to receiving remuneration when you actually paid remuneration, because they are two alternative elements of the offense.
Okay, and
under the Planter case. So if you could address that, that would be awesome.
Okay. Well, under the Planter case, which was a solicitation case and not an attempted capital murder case, the remuneration issue, I'm trying to get that.
Because I think that's the only place where the rub comes in on your party liability theory.
Well, I think I'm a little at a loss as far as that my distinguishing, my point I was distinguishing Planter on is that Planter was applying to a solicitation case, and also that Planter was also standing for the proposition that the state proved a case that they had not pled. And in the case at hand, we had pled the first part of the manner and means under 1903A3, and even if there was no party liability theory, it would not have turned it into the second means of committing the offense under 19.03A3. As far as whether or not you could be a party of offense to remuneration, I think by the very language used when you're drafting the indictment, you have to prove, you have to take the language from the statute, to take that language and not toy with it, and then insert the principal, alleger defendant as the principal, and apply party liability, then reasonably it would apply to the remuneration and not twist it around that he received remuneration, but it was for remuneration, which would be the receipt of. And we're not alleging, by applying party liability, we are saying that Lawrence received the financial gain, not that Howard received the financial gain. I don't feel like I've addressed your questions, really.
Oh, I think you did. I think you did. Thank you.
So let's move on to Mr. Gladden's second point, and that is, what is the evidence, which you have 2 minutes to do now, to show that he committed attempted murder, if this court were to agree with him on the other issue?
That Howard committed attempted murder?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, the record is replete with evidence of his connection to it as far as using the language from party liability as aiding, directing, assisting, and promoting. Mr. Howard not only paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to various people and asked various people to, in fact, murder his wife, he also provided those individuals with photographs of his wife, her daily itinerary on a regular basis, which spanned over several years. And gave them the security code to the home that they shared in Carrollton, Texas, so they could access the home and tell them where valuables were so they could make it look like a robbery.
I think his position is that he did that with Mr. Johnson and others, but not with Mr. Lawrence.
Well, Mr. Lawrence is connected to Mr. Howard by Mr. Howard's reaching out to multiple individuals for them to kill his wife or for them to find someone to kill his wife, and that he is willing to pay a finder's fee, and he is willing to pay anyone who is involved in the murder. And the evidence is going to show that, in fact, he met with Michael Speck on multiple occasions, and that Michael Speck was offered money to kill Nancy Howard, and that, in fact, Michael Speck went to other persons and asked them, in fact, if they would help him kill her. Would you be the driver if I'm the shooter? And then Speck is connected to Lawrence because he used to be in prison with Lawrence. Lawrence lived out of state. He contacted Lawrence and gave him money for him to drive to Texas. Lawrence then and his girlfriend came to Texas, rented the Silver Altima in their names. And then on the date of Nancy's murder, Michael Speck, I'm sorry, I see that I'm out of time.
Okay.
No further questions. The state would just ask this court to affirm the trial court's opinion and find the party liability does apply and it was properly applied in this case.
Thank you, Ms. Simmons. Mr. Gladden?
Yes. I'd ask the court to pay particular attention to page 3 of our reply brief. I think without a lot of the confusing argument that we've heard, it most concisely states what the real question is, and that is whether the applicable hypothetical correct jury instruction determined evidentiary sufficiency in this case, as authorized by the amended indictment in this case, may include the second of two alternative means of committing the offense of capital murder, when only one, that is the first one, has been pled. Planner is very clear on facts very similar to this, if not exactly similar, that you cannot do that. You can't say somebody, if you allege that they received money, you can't make them a party to paying the money, and vice versa. And so I'm not going to belabor that point. I think the case law is clear. And as I say, the quote from Rob that I mentioned a while ago that cites Planner as recently as 2014, I think concisely states what the issue is we're dealing with. The state seems to have a theory of something that a lot of people refer to as 6 degrees of separation. Under that theory, as people commonly talk about it, everybody in the world knows everybody else by 6 degrees of separation. I don't think that is a legal doctrine that should be recognized, and I don't think it's one that should be applied in this case. Contrary to what opposing counsel has said, there is no evidence in the record that our client ever employed Michael Speck, that he ever agreed to pay Michael Speck any money, that he ever employed Michael Speck to kill the appellant's wife, and that all that happened, if it did happen, our client was not involved in any kind of agreement through or not through Billy Johnson for Michael Speck to go hire somebody else to go do something from California. There's just not any evidence, and the recitation of evidence that the state's just referred to does not exist. It's just not in the record. This case, the concurring opinion, Judge Cochran in the Rabb case refers to something that I think applies particularly here. Judge Cochran stated in Rob, I join the majority opinion. I write separately simply to point out that the state lost this conviction because it did not pay sufficient attention to its pleading. I don't know how the state could have paid less attention to what its pleading was. If it intended to prove what it alleged in the original indictment, it should have stuck with that and it should have tried the case on those grounds. For it to wait until after jury selection to realize its mistake and then try to come before this court and ask it basically to ignore Planner or try to overrule sub silentio Planner, which this court is unable to do, I think is error. And I think the court needs to apply Planner, and I think for all the reasons stated in our brief, enter an acquittal and not either reform or remand the case for a new trial on intended murder. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your arguments.